You're listening to the first episode of The Gearheart, Fires in the Snow, a short story by Starla Hutchton. I'm your reader and host, Alex White. Starla will be providing the female voices. You can experience her amazing works at starlahutchton.com. If you haven't had a chance yet, stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find the main podcast, music, articles, art, and more. You can also email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget to find us on Twitter and Facebook as well. Just search The Gearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of The Gearheart. Inspector Hyosuke Saichi frowned at the destruction before him. This was the seventh building in as many days to go up in flames. While fires were common disasters in Koga during the winter months, their occurrence was generally spread out over several weeks. There could only be one explanation. An arsonist was loose in his city. There was something more to this, however. Of that, he felt certain. As he walked the perimeter of the scorched ruins, more than the scent of charred rubbish and human flesh gnawed at him. This fire, like the others over the last few days, was impossibly contained. He could almost trace a straight line around the property where the damage ended. Any normal blaze in a city this crowded, filled with wooden shacks and shanties, would have spread quickly and devoured entire blocks of structures. And then, there were the human remains. That was the worst for him. As a boy, his childhood home had gone up in flames, taking two of his younger brothers and his mother with it. Pieces of a small skull in the ruins of the third arson attack nearly made him flee the scene. But he persevered. After that, he had vowed to see the responsible parties brought to a just, lethal end. By this, the seventh fire, what little could be recovered of the victims was unidentifiable. 2 days ago, one of these targeted buildings had burned so hot that it rivaled a crematorium. He didn't know what could cause that sort of conflagration, but he was beginning to suspect something he dare not voice to his superiors. As he stared into the wreckage, he caught movement out of the corner of his eye, the flash of red beneath inconspicuous gray. Instinct stirred inside him, and he knew he had seen this before. Leaving the junior patrolman to wrap up the mess, he headed after the hint of scarlet. A figure in a hooded cloak moved down the street, perhaps 20 yards ahead of him. The inspector quickened his pace. In his many years with the police force, he had learned to trust his intuition where crime was concerned. He was sure this person knew something about, or was involved with, this plague of arson infecting his city. Snow crunched beneath his feet as he pursued his quarry into a deserted thoroughfare. The leisurely pace turned into a foot race as the cloaked figure ducked into an alleyway. He smiled triumphantly. This was his city, and he knew it well. This particular passage was a dead end, with no back doors to disappear into. He rounded a corner and came to a halt. The figure stood, facing a blank stone wall, waiting.
Inspector Hyosuke Saichi?
A smoky, feminine voice rippled through the air. He balked. That this woman knew his name was unsettling, but that she had purposefully brought him here, to this alley, was even more so. And you are. She pushed back the hood of her cloak, letting a waterfall of silky black hair spill down her back. Slowly, she turned to face him. He stifled a gasp as he took in the features of her astonishingly pale face. She was the embodiment of beauty in the Kohaku Empire, with a perfect oval face and a small, delicate nose. Nothing stood out so much as her eyes, however, with their nearly black irises. Her lids were rimmed in gold, elongating their almond shape with a subtle curved line swinging out from the outer corner. It could have been a trick of his imagination, but she seemed to shimmer with a faint aura, lending her the appearance of a ghost.
I am Koyuki Hara. It is a pleasure to finally make your acquaintance.
She smiled as she spoke, the corners of her crimson lips turning up ever so slightly. With all the discipline of a seasoned officer, he forced himself to speak. What do you know about these fires? Another smile.
I believe we have a mutual interest in that regard. Perhaps we can help each other?
She purred. Help each other, he repeated, unsure of anything in her presence. She took a few steps closer to him.
Tell me, Inspector, have you noticed anything?
She paused as though searching for the right word.
Unusual about these recent fires?
Define unusual. She tilted her head to the side and regarded him coolly.
A man of your talents must have noticed by now. These fires, they do not act like normal fires, yes?
He narrowed his eyes at her. He had indeed noticed this, but what could she know of it? It was such a preposterous notion, he hadn't even dared include it in his incident reports. And what is your involvement in this matter?
I would happily discuss it with you, somewhere a bit warmer, perhaps?
The precinct building is quite comfortable. My office is... She cut him off.
Unacceptable, Inspector. My information requires the utmost discretion.
Warning bells clanged loudly in the back of his mind. Everything about this situation told him to turn around and run. One thing stayed him. His city was under attack, and he must find the culprit and bring them to justice. If this woman had information, he would get it from her. Discretion. What sort of information do you possess? If it's protection you require...
No.
She interrupted him again.
It is not my safety that concerns me. As to the nature of my information... Inspector Saichi, do you know anything of magic?
Despite his misgivings about the past week, he snorted a brief laugh. Magic. The stuff of children's stories. Her perfectly shaped eyebrows lifted slightly.
Children's stories, is it? You are a man that relies on evidence, things he can prove. What does the evidence tell you about your fires?
He set his jaw and gave her a hard look. Sharing case information with the public, to say nothing of a mysterious stranger, was strictly forbidden. Without being told this, she nodded, seeming to understand.
Then how about this?
She raised her right hand and traced a pattern in the air. The inspector's eyes widened. A tracer of icy blue light accompanied every motion. Within seconds, the pattern was complete, and it shot out towards him. He dodged to the side, and the symbol slammed into the brick wall on the other end of the alley. The surface of the building was instantly coated with a thick sheet of ice. Forgetting about the woman for a moment, he approached the structure. After removing a glove, his fingers reached out and slid down the slick side. Impossible, he whispered. Koyuki cleared her throat.
Now, perhaps we can continue this conversation elsewhere.
He stared at her as she sipped from her teacup. How should he react to the story she'd told him? This business about magic, it was all too unbelievable. And yet, he had seen the proof with his own eyes. Magic was a reality. In the last half an hour, he'd regained control over his trembling hands, but little else. How did she stay so damnably calm? Learning that a fundamental truth of your world was merely illusion was enough to shake even the most stalwart of policemen.
You must understand my position, Inspector,
she said over the rim of her cup, a thick insignia ring tapping gently at the porcelain.
The existence of magic users must remain a secret. If who we are and what we do were to be exposed, more lives than only mine would be at risk. My goal is not to educate other parties, and my terms are not negotiable. Do you understand this?
He nodded, but his brow furrowed. What I do not understand, Miss Hara, is what benefit it is to you if we work together. Surely the talents at your disposal make up for anything I might bring to the table.
Magic is not all-powerful.
She set down her drink and leaned forward. The scent of jasmine hung around her, scattering his thoughts as he inhaled it.
I lack a working knowledge of the city, including information about the targeted buildings and the victims claimed in the attacks, and thus any patterns that might help me predict the next location.
He sat back in his chair, escaping her perfume. Hyosuke sipped at his tea as he gave his mind time to clear. It seemed a straightforward deal. If he provided information about the case, she would provide information on the arsonist, and likely how to stop him. So tell me, what sort of wizardry is afoot in Koga? Koyuki slid her cup forward, and he refilled it.
I am not certain, as yet, what the end goal is. There is something familiar about these fires, though.
Are there more of your kind? He stopped his cup midway to his mouth.
At the moment? No, not in Koga. So you see, Inspector, we need each other in this situation. Can I count on your help?
If what she told him was true, which he believed it to be, what choice was there? If he wished to stop the arson attacks, he would have to trust her. Very well, Miss Hara. We have an accord. He watched her circle the table in his library, studying the large map. Scattered about its surface were 7 red pins marking the sites of arson attacks.
What were these buildings used for?
Koyuki paused on the 5th pass around the table and turned her eyes to him. Removing a beat-up notebook from his shirt pocket, the inspector flipped to a center page. He approached the map and pointed to the buildings in order of their demise. A tea house, opium den, private residence, warehouse, noodle shop, and another private residence. The last one was an abandoned building, but most recently had been a gambling parlor. She watched him point to each side in turn, following the path with her gaze.
And there was no immediately noticeable link between the properties?
The opium den was run by a distant family member of the owner of the 2nd private residence. He shrugged and sighed. After I made that connection, I started digging deeper on all of the property owners, employees, visitors, and residents, but couldn't find anything to link them further. Aside from all the people involved being Koga residents, there were no common factors. She frowned and continued circling. After a few more passes, she stopped and looked at him again.
What about the buildings themselves?
Meaning what, exactly?
Structural composition, perhaps. Were they made of similar materials?
Most of the buildings in Koga are made from the same basic supplies, yes. If there were anything unique in their makeup, it went up with the rest of the structure.
And Koga has no central database on building architecture.
She sighed irritably. He shrugged. If any of these places had blueprints, we've no way of knowing. After a moment of contemplation, she announced,
We shall have to visit each site then.
The inspector shot a glance out the window. It was nearly nightfall. Perhaps it would be better if...
Wait. Is it possible?
She cut him off mid-suggestion, Before he could think of a proper response, she had taken up a pencil and connected two of the red pins with a line of lead.
"Show me the order again,"
she instructed him. As he pointed to each site according to the day of the attack, Koyuki drew marks between them. When she connected the final location, she stepped away and studied her work. "Does this mean something to you?" he asked after several moments.
"Possibly,"
she answered.
"I am unfamiliar with fire glyphs, but I am sure this must be one."
Hyosuke's brow creased as he tried to place the meaning of the word. "Glyph?"
"A symbol used to manifest magic."
She demonstrated this by drawing a shape in the air. The same blue tracers from the alley accompanied the motion. This time, instead of something flying at his face, a tiny ball of ice hovered above her upturned fingertips in place of the glyph.
"You see?"
"What is that?"
"This."
She dropped the shimmering sphere into a forgotten teacup.
"Only a little frost."
The liquid remnants in the cup crystallized instantly, an icy glaze spreading over the rim and in a small radius on the tabletop. "So you think our arsonist is trying to create an immense version of a glyph?" He tore his eyes away from the small display, still uncomfortable with the concept of magic, instead studying her marks on the map. He was unsure they resembled anything at all, but between the two of them, she was better qualified to judge.
"I shall research the matter this evening."
Koyuki sketched a copy of the lines on a scrap of paper. As he looked up from the map, she started for the door. "You're leaving?"
"Of course,"
she said, casting him a coy smile.
"There's much to be done. Did you expect..."
She trailed off, raising an eyebrow with an unspoken question. The inspector gave a blustery cough and his face reddened. "Most certainly not, madam. I only meant, that is, should the need arise, how will I contact you?" Shrugging into her cloak, she laughed.
"Oh, Inspector, do not worry. I will find you."
She threw him a wink, then slipped out the door. Even after the panel slid closed behind her, he remained fixed to the spot, staring at where she had been moments before. The scent of jasmine lingered in the air as he wondered again if perhaps this wasn't a horribly bad idea after all. The following morning saw him at yet another burned-out husk of a building. A constable had rousted him from his bed in the early hours, though this mattered little, as his sleep had been fitful. When rest did find him, his dreams were plagued with visions of bonfires that froze all they touched and other nightmarish things pursuing him. The news of another arson was almost a welcome reprieve. The scene was the same as the others, a structure burned to ash, an invisible boundary containing the damage, and a few remains of a poor soul or two. The extent of the damage made it difficult to judge how many bodies went up in the blaze. The victims probably hadn't felt much, however. This one was another opium den, and whoever was inside most likely wasn't conscious for the attack. He sighed wearily and looked around at the gathered crowd. It was distracting, the wondering if she was there, watching. Although, knowing she was here might be even more diverting. He towed a piece of blackened rubble, and it disintegrated with the movement. Beneath the charred bits, something glinted at him, and he bent to examine it more closely. A gray stone, polished to a high shine, was embedded in the scorched earth. With the aid of a shard of window glass, he pried it out of the ground and examined it. Despite the chilling temperature, the stone was warm to the touch. The inspector turned it over, revealing a mark chiseled into the underside. He frowned. Aside from the lines being more curved, it was identical to the glyph Koyuki had drawn the previous evening. He slipped it into his pocket, intending to show it to his secret partner at their next meeting. Aside from this find, no new information presented itself, and he again left the junior men to the task of organizing the cleanup. He returned to his precinct office, tired and disheartened. His report on this incident felt like an exercise in duplicating forms. Though the uncovered stone was evidence of magic afoot, even suggesting the possibility of such a thing would be cause to remove him from the case, not to mention the doctors he'd have to see as a result. He'd seen several inspectors lose their careers to what the commanders called occupational fatigue. Only now did he suspect that perhaps he was not the first police officer to run across evidence of the supernatural. This new understanding made him extra cautious as he filled in his report. He might be one of the most well-respected officers within the force, but he was well aware that he was disposable. After scanning his report one last time for anything that could be misconstrued, he filed it with the commander and excused himself to revisit the older sites. He wasn't entirely certain what to do with himself, given that the next move was Koyuki's. Until she came to him with more information, he was at an impasse. Picking his way through the chilly streets, he found himself back at the site of the first fire. It had been a small tea house nestled between an apothecary and a watchmaker's shop. The blaze had only claimed a single victim, thought to be the owner of the establishment. As he stared into what little remained of the initial clearing of debris, ghostly memories danced at the edges of his mind. Glimpses of the history he wanted to forget played amidst his scattered thoughts, charred scraps of fabric hanging from a clothesline, the waterlogged, blackened remains of a stuffed bear, the echoes of screams. His throat tightened as they revisited him. He jumped as a hand touched his shoulder. The inspector whirled around to see a pair of gold-rimmed eyes searching his face. He released a breath and slammed the door of memories closed. "Good afternoon, Miss Hara. Any news?" Koyuki stepped back and studied him for a moment before answering.
"I believe so. And yourself? I hear there was another fire early this morning."
He nodded. "Tea?"
"Please."
The tea house was crowded, but the private screened booth in the far corner provided the privacy they required. As their drinks were cooling, Koyuki placed a small, egg-shaped device with a flat bottom in the center of the table. She pressed down on the top, and as she retracted her hand, Hyosuke noticed a faint hum in the air. The spiral etchings around its surface vibrated, making them difficult to focus on. When he cast her a quizzical look, she said,
"In case other ears wish to listen."
She offered no further explanation, instead staring at him expectantly. With a sigh, he removed the stone from his pocket and rubbed it between his thick fingers. "I found this at the site this morning. I was about to search the others for something similar. But when you appeared, I thought perhaps it was better to discuss the object before meddling with more of them." He placed it, glyph down, on the table and slid it across to her. Her eyebrows furrowed as she picked up the object, then shot up in alarm as she turned it over, revealing the symbol.
"I..."
she began, a quaver in her voice.
"How is this possible?"
"Is it not the same as the one on the map?" he asked, both confused that she had seemed to be drawing a different conclusion than he had, and concerned at how clearly it had shaken her. She nodded.
"It is, but..."
she trailed off.
"The person who made this has been dead for 5 years.
He blinked. "Are you certain? You barely recognized it last evening."
"I am absolutely certain."
She met his eyes.
"The lines on the map were inexact."
Her gaze dropped back to the stone, and she leaned back against the seat.
"Much like every individual has identifying strokes in their penmanship, so it is with mages and their glyphs. The man who made this..."
Her voice broke, almost imperceptibly.
"He used to be my partner."
"Partner?" He sat up straight. The word implied a working relationship, and that sort of relationship meant an organization or agency. Koyuki was definitely part of something greater than she had initially let on. He glanced at her insignia ring as it tapped against the teacup. It annoyed him that he'd overlooked it. Only now, when he was far too involved to back out, did he see the truth of it. "Miss Sahara, who precisely do you work for?" She closed her eyes and pursed her lips. Clearly, this was not information he was supposed to possess, or that she wanted to impart.
"We work to control and contain the use of magic that extends to governments as well as civilians. I apologize if you are misled, but I am not in a position to give away our secrets. But trust me, Inspector Saichi, when I say that I know things about the Empire that would turn your hair white.
Hyosuke slumped back. The news was disconcerting, but he had committed himself to see the job through. If this meant working with an unsanctioned agency, he had little choice. The fate of his city rested upon his actions.
And your partner?
Reluctantly, he prompted her to continue.
Noriaki.
Koyuki paused to check the humming device before continuing.
I was not with him on that mission,
she explained.
It was a very sensitive case involving the Kohaku government. Information was provided on a need-to-know basis, and it was decided I did not need to know. You remember the night the Imperial Palace caught fire?
Hyosuke nodded slowly.
Everyone remembers that. It destroyed the eastern wing of the palace.
She bit her lip as she drifted away in thought.
That night was the last I ever saw Noriaki. If he was involved, they did not acknowledge it. The coincidence is too great, though. 2 days after the incident, I was told he died in one of the outlying villages. But I knew Noriaki. If he was involved, whatever his reasons, it was for good.
You saw his body.
She jerked, as though he had struck her.
What?
This Noriaki. You saw his body.
Koyuki frowned.
No, but that was more than 5 years ago. If he were still alive, he would have contacted me.
And you are certain of this?
Something about her reaction to this old partner told him their relationship was more than a strictly professional one. At his question, she met his eyes and glared at him, taking him aback. Indeed, there was definitely more to the story, but he decided not to press the issue.
Perhaps he was simply unable to do so, prevented by someone or something. You say that this is his glyph. Is it possible that you were given false information?
She said nothing, her gaze firmly fixed on the table.
Misahara.
Koyuki still refused to meet his eyes, instead sipping her tea with intense focus.
We should have another look at the map. I may be able to tell you where the next fire will occur.
The matter was decidedly dropped. Whatever lay in her past, she would not be sharing it with him anytime soon.
And we're back with another Uncle Abner's Magic Radio Hour. And the same as last time, I'm your dear old Uncle Abner. I sure do hope y'all enjoyed that first episode of Fires in the Snow. I know I did. We're gonna bring you another one real soon. But first, a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast has been brought to you by Harlan's Forget It Sauce Brand Tequila. Have you recently had an encounter you'd rather forget? Perhaps you awoke to find yourself in some compromising photographs with your mother-in-law and a couple of sheep. Don't fret, a few pulls from a bottle of Harlan's will put you right as rain. Harlan's Forget It Sauce Brand Tequila, for the taste that... Well, I'm sure I know this one. For the taste that... And by Benicia's pre-ripped bodices, perhaps you've got a fantasy about being a big, strong man, but your hands aren't the way they used to be. Or perhaps you've got a gentleman collar with an obsessive nature and an aversion to destruction. Either way, our pre-ripped bodices are guaranteed to steam up the place faster than a ruptured boiler. Benicia's pre-ripped bodices for the lily-livered lover.
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.